Blog Talk Radio.
Watching you as you're dreaming, the dreams I thought I knew. Your smile shows the reason I watched it all come true. Your touch is cold and distant, and I still loving you. I'm waking up.
That was The Words You Cannot Say, written by our very own Jay Hatter, with the musical stylings of Shout Even Shy. Hello, hello, and welcome to What the Flock. And today, it is all about, you know, dead poets and where we got our inspiration, whether they're poems we heard as a child or came across as an adult, it doesn't matter. Today we're kind of, you know, paying tribute anyway to the inspiration given to us by the poets that came before. So I will mention poems. I'm probably not going to read many of the older poems or the inspirational poems and just go through the poems that we wrote that were inspired by said poems, except for, since it's my show, I'm going to do mine because I have a thing. But before we get all up in it, let's say hello to Sky. Hello, hello.
Hello.
And Raconteur.
Hello, hello.
And Mr. J. Hatter himself. How are you doing?
Just fine, thank you.
Awesome, awesome, awesome. Okay, my favorite poem, and I'm going to give you all the backstory because why the heck not? My favorite poem, like, of all time, like, far and away, bar none, is Ad Finem by Ella Wheeler Wilcox.
And I blame my mother because she basically hijacked me and my sister whenever she was in an emotional mood of whatever, you know, misery loves company. And so she, I am so sorry. My dog is throwing things around and it's probably going to get really annoying, but better her in the background doing that than eating me. So there is that. And so she would just bring us into her she actually got into the garbage. So as soon as I am done with my intro, I'm going to have to deal with my dog. But she used to hijack us when she was all moody and read us poetry, usually sad poems, love poems, until it's, you know, gets dark and stormy. And I live in Florida, so thunderstorms would blacken the skies at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And then it was all Poe all the time. But this is, and it's on the board, but I'll read it. This, and I will cry because I have cried every time I have read this since I was a child, and it has not changed. It's on the board, but if you can talk amongst yourselves for 2 seconds, I've got to get garbage out of my dog's mouth. So if you just, you know, rack and forth, take it away.
Oh, the dog's talking trash. I hear you. Oh, my God. For a minute, I thought you were talking about me, but no. Anyway. So the idea of being inspired by different poems, you know, it's funny because sometimes, you know, we all seem to be pretty fairly prolific, at least those of us that are on the phone now. And we forget, you know, our own body of work half the time. It's like, you know, when she came up with the topic, I was like, you know, down with it. And then I'm sitting there going, wait a minute, what did I write to that was based on, you know, another poem that inspired me? You know, I've done it with a lot of songs, but I never recall doing it. And now, you know, that we've been talking a little bit, it's like, you know, oh yeah, I did it to that one. I did it to this one. It's really odd. I don't know.
I agree.
Understand
when I think
that.
It's funny.
No, go ahead.
Oh, I was just saying, for me too, like, I go through bouts of reading different people, you know, because I like different, and then, so I feel like if I'm reading a book by a certain poet, I start to feel more comfortable in that style. I've been reading a lot of Emily Dickinson, so a lot of my poems of late have been short into that style, into that rhyme, into that brevity, and then I just read, I was just reading some Anne Sexton, so I pulled that, and I don't like to read. It takes me a long time to get through poetry books because I don't like to read the same poet for a long time. I like to skip around, but I feel like if I start to read a big body of work for any period of time, I like that style becomes a little bit more from, you know, Anne Sexton, Sylvia Plath, that confessional style poetry. And you know, if I'm reading Robert Frost and Dickinson, I'm rhyming more. So not even just the specific poem, but the styles as well, I feel, are influential, for me at least.
Well, I think that goes for a lot of us. You kind of immerse yourself, especially if somebody has a very distinct flow. Like, you can't, like, read The Raven and go into writing something and not have at least a verse or a few lines want to fall into that. Then if you read it 6 months later, you may not notice it, but at the time, it's all you see, you know? So
yeah.
I absolutely... I can see that. So this is Abstinent by Ella Wheeler Wilcox. I've got my glasses on and I still can't see, so bear with me. I'm having a time. It goes like this. On the white throat of useless passion that scorched my soul with its burning breath, I clutched my hands in murderous fashion and held them close in a grip of death. For why should I fan or feed with fuel a love that showed me but blank despair? So my hold was firm and my grasp was cruel. I meant to strangle it then and there. I thought it was dead, but with no warning, it rose from its grave last night and came and stood by my bed till the early morning, and over it spoke your name. Its throat was red where my hands had held it. It burned my brow with its scorching breath, and I knew the moment my eyes beheld it, a love like this can know no death. For just one kiss that your lips have given. Whew. And a lost and beautiful path to me. I would gladly barter my hopes of heaven and all the bliss of eternity. For never a joy are the angels keeping to lay at my feet in paradise. like that into your strong arms, creeping and looking into your love-lit eyes. I know, in the way that sins are reckoned, this thought is a sin of deepest dye. But I know, too, if an angel beckoned, standing close by the throne on high, and you, adown by the gates infernal, should open your loving arms and smile, I would turn my back on things supernal to lay on your breast a little while. To know for an hour your mind completely, mine in body and soul, my own, I would bear unending tortures sweetly, with not a murmur and not a moan. A lighter sin or lesser error might change through hope or fear divine, but there is no fear, and hell has no terror to change or alter a love like mine. End poem. That poem that makes me cry every single time I read it for as long as I can remember, since I was 7 years old. This is part two of today's show, for those that do not know. I have had a lot of questions, as I have this really crappy segue. I have had a lot of questions here in the last couple of weeks about AutoRank. Now, this is not throwing shade on AutoRank. This is not, judging anybody who loves to use it. I'm just going to go through, because I had a lot of questions on what is it, how does it work, yada, yada, blah, blah, blah. I think it can be a great tool, because what AutoRank does on all poetry, you know what, I didn't even say, hey, this is a team of voices brought to you by the A.P. Taylor Poetry Foundation. You can find us on allpoetry.com, because I'm forgetting everything. I'm scatterbrained today. You can find us on allpoetry.com, which is free to join and is the world's largest online poetry site. Once you sign in, come find us at a team of voices. We're happy to have you and read you, and you too could be on one of our many, many shows that run the gamut of entertainment, from game shows to music to, poetry shows like this one. Okay, so back to what I was saying. AutoRank is supposed to rate you 1 to 10, but it's like negative 2 to 13. So just on its face, I have issues, because I'm just particular. But
I know where you went wrong.
What?
I know where you went wrong. You rhymed.
Well, this isn't my poem. That was the famous poem. Yeah. So that was the famous poem from a million years ago. So I'm only ranking, I'm only going to show the famous poems, because, Lord knows it scored a total of a 1. That heartfelt, make me cry, favorite of all poems, scored a 1. Now, this is to say, I don't want, for new writers or writers that are a little tentative, to look at their scores as they write on All Poetry and be like, oh my God, I suck. Oh my God, I have to write the way they're telling me to write. And then it changes who you are, how you pour things out, the way you want to express yourself. However, it does rate you on being concrete versus abstract, your verbiage, your cliches, your different grammatical and professional similarities. So if you wanted to not be cliche, if you've been told your stuff is cliche and you scored whatever number on cliches, you can tweak your words and work that to your favor. So it's not necessarily about having to score high. It's about using it as a tool. The only real problem I have with AutoRank is that it is not just professional poems. It takes all the poems, everything that is listed as a poem on the site, whether it is a blog post, a rant, a 10-word poem versus a note to somebody else. Like, it doesn't differentiate. As long as it is labeled under the red poem thing, it is then in the mix. And doesn't matter if it's a good poem, doesn't matter if it's a bad poem, doesn't matter if it's written by a 14-year-old, a 50-year-old, a professional, an amateur, it doesn't matter. It's all in the mix. So this is not scoring people, famous or otherwise, against professional level things. This is like the whole thing is all mixed together. The professional ones, the mediocre ones, the amateur ones, it just doesn't differentiate. So I had a 24-year-old guy be like, this thing says I suck. I was like, this thing says I suck. And, you know, I was like, it's not a grade. It's not a, you know, A, B, C, or D. I think it's a fun tool. But I wanted to take the professional poems, the poems that are loved, the poems that we all found inspiration in, to see what they were ranked, just so I can show those who were wondering what auto rank rates the greats. And I forgot which sonnet I was looking up earlier, but Shakespeare himself scored a one. So if that, you know, tells you anything, there we are. The poem that I wrote is not the one that I actually wrote with this one in mind. I couldn't find it anywhere. I can't remember the name of it because I'm scatterbrained and I can't remember crap. But since this one reminds me of my mother, I wrote one, or I'm bringing one that I wrote because my mother said I couldn't. Because my mother was also a poet, and she kind of hated the way I wrote. It turns out she didn't, but I felt like she hated the way I wrote. And she wrote with a very, very specific cadence. And I had asked her once, I was like, they all kind of sound like you. They all sound very similar. She's like, well, I bet you can't do it. I was like, I bet you I can. And so this is that. And it's actually lovely. And it made her cry. Like she's like, well, that's just fabulous. I was like, well, all right then. I wasn't expecting that. So I'll let other people talk in like a minute. Let me just finish my little segment. Then it's all about everybody else. Okay. This is, I don't even think I put it on the board. Give me a second. I am just ass backwards today. I really I did put it on the board. Sweet Jesus, my brain is not with me. I am telling you, I've had a rough couple of days. Okay, this is Traces of You. This one I actually wrote. No, we are not auto-ranking it. I'm sure it's zero. Okay, it goes like this. Traces of you lie in every moment silver, even in my darkest day. Traces of you can make the empty linger the second you walk away. Traces of you are my hidden treasure, a joy that is all my own. Traces of you are too fine to measure, yet brighten my darkness alone. Traces of you make life worth living, the birth of my very smile. Traces of you make ease of forgiving, though memories tend to beguile. Traces of you turn hell into glory, then turn back the other way. Traces of you rewrite the story every second of every day in poem.
That's stinking beautiful. Wow. You know, you've always had a way, from when I first started reading you, of putting the emotions on the page, whether you rhymed or did words or whatever, and then you read it, and you could tell your connection to it when you read it, too, with... I won't say it takes away from it, but you know, people tend to notice that, I think, more than they notice the words sometimes. But when you get down to it, you know, especially when you start to mention what inspired it, it adds a depth to it that is unquantifiable. You know, you can comment on these things for days, and you know, most of the time, you know, I know in your case specifically, it doesn't matter what you say. You know, you wrote it, you know, for what it is, what it is, you know, make of it what you will, as they say. But at the same time, it holds, what am I trying to say? I'm all over the place now, like you. I guess you're scattering some things. Anyway, I really thought this was beautiful. You know, I could see your mother representing it, and I could understand why you would say that, you know, because you love that poem so much, it's inspired, and that's why you wanted to use one instead of the one that you wrote specifically thinking of the accident poem. It's just beautiful.
Thank you.
Scott, what'd you think? Can you comment for Pretty Bird?
Yeah, I thought it was beautiful, and the thing I like about this is that you don't put any pretense. Like some people, you know, you can say, this is a love poem, this is a poem about a parent, this is a poem about a kid. I think there's such an openness to this because you never pinpoint exactly. You focus on the emotion and what that other person means to you, so that when a reader is reading it, they can put whoever they are thinking of in their mind. because they connect to the emotions so well, and they can say, they can think of whom they it makes them feel this way as well. And I like that openness to it. I also love, you know, when you repeat lines, sometimes it can go south because you're not, you know, but sometimes it really emphasizes the point of the poem, and it does here where it says traces of you. It also makes it a little bit more rhythmical, I think, and a little bit more song-like when you put in those refrains. And then the thing, the one that I really liked was the two couple. There was a couple that I really liked. Was a too fine to measure, of course, you know, not putting people into boxes, and make ease of forgiving, you know, because, and I like that because not everything in life, every moment with someone that you love, no matter who it is going to be perfect. Any relationship you have, any interpersonal relationship, not talking about just a romantic, but anyone, you're going to have those moments where there is going to have to be forgiveness. And I like how you don't shy away from that, how you mention that. And then, of course, my favorite was the outtake, was the last two lines. The traces of you rewrite the story every second of every day. How, when you know, every person that you come in contact with you, especially someone who's prominent in your life and who's impactful, is going to change that story. It's going to alter you as a person, your thoughts, your day. They're going to impact you. And I love how you went out with that, because I think sometimes we forget how impactful people can be and don't give that enough thought to say, okay, well, who am I surrounding myself around, and who am I letting in my space, and who am I letting alter me and my world? And I love how you wrote that. Really well done.
Thank you. And before we get a comment from Hatter, we have a caller. Is that you, Wayne?
That would be me.
Hi,
nice
Wayne.
To be here.
I'm glad
nice
you
to be
made
here.
It.
I find it. Carry on. Enjoy it.
Well, what I heard was the classic four song Traces. You know what I'm speaking of? Traces of you, of love?
Oh, yeah.
It could go that way, Traces of you, Traces of love. No, it's a warm fuzzy. And what was your definition of why you were writing Brevity again?
Who? Me?
Were you? Did you mention that you were?
No.
Oh. Okay.
I mentioned Brevity briefly.
That must be. Never mind. I'm having trouble hearing everybody. So it's all right.
Okay, let us go down the list of today's things, which means Raconteur, you are first. And we will do She Walks in Beauty. That was your inspiration poem. So I'm going to put that up for people to take a gander at. And both you and Arcana Amore chose this one. It's fairly short, I think.
Okay, I'll be right back, okay?
Okay. Uh-huh. This one's fairly short, and I'll tell you what this one got in a minute. So I'll go ahead and read the short ones, I guess, because some are really, really long, and that didn't happen. We only have 2 hours, and I already talked for like 20-some-odd minutes. Okay, this was The Inspiration, and this is by Lord Byron. It is She Walks in Beauty, and it goes like this. She walks in beauty like the night of cloudless climes and starry skies, and all that's... Yeah, I can't see. And all that's best of dark and bright meet in her aspect and her eyes, thus mellowed to that tender light which heaven to gaudy day denies. One shade the more, one ray the less, had half impaired the nameless grace, which waves in every raven tress or softly lightens o'er her face, where thoughts serenely sweet express how pure, how dear their dwelling place. And on that cheek and o'er that brow, so soft, so calm, yet eloquent, the smiles that win, the tints that glow, but tell of days in goodness spent, a mind at peace, with all below, a heart whose love is innocent. And that one got a, I don't know, because I have to find it. I have them all open, but there are as many tonight, so it should be here. Ah, this one got a one. That seems to be a theme for the evening so far. The two famous poems both got bottom of the barrel. So, you know, there is that. So just, you know, hopefully nobody feels bad when they get ones and twos and threes. I'm sure most of my crap is a two or a three at best. I mean, do I have some higher ones? Yes. Do I notice? No, I just don't. But I'm not everybody else. It seems to weigh on people. So, you know, all the grades tend to be fairly low. So now it is time for Raconteur's poem. And it is on the board. Let me know when you see it so I can hit play. Will you guys see it?
I know you're not asking me.
Nope, I'm asking everybody else who's all silent. You guys see it on the board from Rack so I can hit play? Guy?
I'm sorry, I'm a bad reader. I have it.
Okay, here we go.
I'm sorry, I'm a bad
You're fine. It's just a little dead silence, but I'm going to hit play. Here we go.
Behind Her Eyes by Raconteur. To look at you is to see the stars snatched from the heavens to be placed in far more seraphic settings. Some might mistake them for your eyes, but I see the spark that you cling to amidst the darkness of myriad hardships that you've endured. I would gladly live a lifetime as a tear, nurturing your joy, refusing to traverse your cheek, that I might live on, basking in your glow. I lose myself in your celestial orbs, pierced to my core, overwhelmed by desire, growing more irresistible every moment we're apart. Just a look so touches me, I am overwhelmed by the intoxicating effects of your grace. As efficient as the winter strips the trees, you bring me to my knees, leaving me hopeful to be there, adoring witness to the changing countenance of your face. As you grow even more beautiful, every passing moment we share our tears and laughter. Last night I watched the sunset and wished it brought you comfort that you might find rest. And the times slumber eludes you, the skies weep, wanting only to wash away your anguish. With everything I discover, I realize there's so much more I want to learn, offering everything I am, asking only for your heart in return. End poem.
You know, there is a beauty in this, Rack. There is, and I like the message in this better than the other one, by the way, meaning better than Byron. Shh, I said nothing. The stars snatched from the heavens, and some might mistake them for your eyes, which is, you know, lovely, but it's when you go on to say, but I see the spark that you cling to amidst the darkness of the myriad hardships you've endured, the fact that you don't just see the smile or dancing eyes, you see everything that she's gone through, all of the weight that she bears, that she smiles through, and not necessarily masking anything, and that's what you find beautiful. And to be privy to even parts of that pain and laughter and the things that matter, that they don't have to be good, that's where the beauty lies. That's where the adoration is. That's where love grows, and that is freaking stunning. That is just lovely. I mean, there's so many people that just, you know, when things get real, they get running. And so it's just a beautiful, beautiful notion. And I absolutely, absolutely love that. I love the message. I love your read. So you're going to have to get to recording some things, and I'll help you with that because I miss them. I'm just saying. So, Wayne, what are your thoughts?
Yeah. Well, I said, Rack, if you was dead, you'd be my favorite dead poet. This is Greg, boy. I'm glad I'm not Ice Cube because I'd be melting to listen to your poetry. You did a good job of this. It's very touching. Great job. Like it, man.
And Sky, your thoughts?
I'm glad I'm not an Ice Cube, Wayne. I couldn't agree with your comment more, Pretty Bird, on the dark times as well. It's just such a beautiful piece. And to furthermore, to share our tears and our laughter, both those good times and bad, I love how you brought that in. And there's a beautiful pace to this. And it wasn't just, I mean, you have a beautiful reading voice, you really do, but it wasn't just your voice. It is paced even in the poem. Even if you were to read it yourself, there's this beautiful pace to it. And I love how it is about adoration, but it's also about asking for nothing in return, but their hearts. You know, there are so many things people can say. I think when somebody says, well, why do you like this person? A lot of times, and even I've been, you know, at fault for it too, it's sometimes they make it about themselves. They say, well, I like the way they make me feel. I like them and all these things, and this is so towards the other person and so giving to the other rather than a selfish kind, a self-centered kind of, I guess I would say, caring or adoration. I also really loved this line, the slumber eludes you and the skies weep, wanting only to wash away your anguish. I thought that was quite beautiful. And I have to agree with Pretty Bird again, too. Let's get some recording done. Let's get some things happening. But, yeah, absolutely love this one.
Thanks, Sky.
Hatter, are you back?
Yes,
no,
I am.
Back. Oh, did you get to hear the poem?
Yeah, I did. First, you got to be careful what you wish for, okay? This is a good feeling poem. Anytime you drop into your knees, I love those lines. Time slumber, this is skies weep. Skies weeping, yeah, you got it all. Good piece.
Absolutely. There is a second poem to that same inspirational Lord Byron poem, so I'm going to go ahead and do that one. And there's no recording from Arcana Amor. And I think this is the first time I've been on a show that he's written for that he did not have a recording. So I am going to read it because I am just going to read it. Okay. And it is because, you know, I don't want to put anybody on the spot because everybody has their thing. So I shall read. It is I Bathe in Dawn by Arcana Amor. And it goes like this. And I hope I do it justice because I have been falling all over my tongue here. But before I get to that poem, let's say hello to Deb. Hello, Miss Deborah, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I am here and sticking it out and scatterbrained as all get out. But, you know, at least it's interesting.
I don't think anyone's ever called you dull. Just saying.
Well, that's a good thing. So I have Arcana Amor on the board, and he wrote to the same inspirational poem as Rack and Tor, so I had already put that one up on the board. So this is I Bathe in Dawn. So it goes like this. I bathe in dawn that softly creeps, where rises light o'er raven skies, on whispers speak of night there sleeps, this tender glow of warmth to rise. The gloom be gone in fleeting leaps. There seeks the sun to wake my eyes. The frost of morn, my eyes, the frost of morn bids hushed farewell and sees fair dew that gently fades. How sweet a chorus the song to tell, which sweeps my ears in verdant glades. The taste of innocence there to dwell, which flutters in trilling serenades. Where drift the clouds or autumn hues, a beauty shared in heaven's gaze.
So pours the depths of sapphire views, which brightly shine in goodly days, and soothe the sullen nameless muse of gouty tones to mend their ways. The joy, the peace, this paradise brings of placid tones and shades of gold, and feel the calm, the quietude sings, but speaks in dreams I heard foretold. Such gentle sway of hopeful things, the daybreak sees, my soul behold. End poem.
Okay, first I'm going to say that is absolutely perfectly metered, just like the muse poem. So I kind of love that. It made it really easy to read, even though I can't see, and that wasn't your writing. It's the fact that my vision is crap today. So I absolutely love this. This has a very classic feel to it. I love verdant glades. I do sometimes. There's a time for grass, and sometimes there's a time for something a little bit more verbally spectacular. And I think that it fits perfectly, especially with the style and the flow of your piece. And it's lovely. You know, you have the whispers. You have the morning glow and the way it kind of washes over things, and it kind of has that mood, because I don't know how y'all are, but for me, if I am up at sunrise and I'm actually up and looking at the sun, because those are two completely different scenarios, but if I'm sitting out there and loving life and watching the day waken, there's just kind of the end to the nightly hush before the rush of morning that comes, before as the birds start to sing and the air seems still a little bit cooler just before the sun wants to warm it. It's got that kind of feel to it, and this entire piece feels like that to me, which is quite lovely. You got to love a poem that takes you somewhere. So, Deb, what are your thoughts?
Oh, I agree. It's absolutely gorgeous, and the visuals throughout it are fantastic, and I there's something about the one stanza, all the stanzas, but the frost of morn bid hushed farewell, and sees fair dew that gently fades, how sweet a chorus of song to tell, which sweeps my ears in verdant glades. It's just, like you said, it's spot on, and it really does have a classic feel to it. Like, you know, you could have convinced me that this was something that someone pulled out from one of the, as we say, dead poets. A very, very impressive. And I can see that it's also a multi-award winner. Easy to see why. Fantastic piece.
Absolutely. And Hatter, your thoughts?
Yeah, I got it. Totally agree. Got an old school flavor to it. Got great cadence. Beautifully done. Wow.
I fully concur. And Raconteur, what are your thoughts on Arcana Amor?
You know, it has that a feeling like the emotion was the prompt. And, you know, they both wrote to the same thing, kind of like dueling pianos almost. And like you said, it was in a style similar to the original, but, you know, at the same time, it had its own voice and it went in a different direction, but still had the same thought behind it. So it was beautifully executed and original at the same time.
And Wayne, your thoughts?
This is a lovely poem. It reads like a classic. Lord Byron will be impressed with this poem, I think. And the way she wrote the six line stanzas is smooth in a way that kind of hypnotizes the reader. And very good job of this. She did a great job of this. I like the poem a lot.
Awesomeness. And Sky.
Yeah, I thought it was a beautiful poem. My four favorite lines was the frost of morn, bids hush farewell, and sees fair dew that gently fades. And then if you scroll all the way down to and soothe the sullen nameless muse of gaudy tones to mend their ways, I thought it was gorgeous. There was lots of beautiful language in here, descriptions when you think about sapphire views. And then the catch rhymes were elegant and not overdone. And the stanzas were so neat. And I don't just mean in the way you're looking at it, but I mean when you're thinking about, like I think a couple of people mentioned cadence, and you're thinking about the neatness of lines and not over over-verbalizing them and catching that rhyme perfectly. They did a really good job. Really well done.
Absolutely. It was lovely. And it's very different from a lot of his production pieces. It was just soft, and it very much felt like Morning to me. So kudos, kudos, kudos. Quick question, Deb. I'm assuming all the emails are up to date because Tan's put one on the board, but I didn't see her on the list.
Who was that?
Tan's.
Let me double check the A Team of Voices email, but yes, as of the moment, it's up to date, but I will double check for you right now.
I appreciate that. Okay, I'm going to put Titus. Titus gave me two pieces. He gave me one that's close to his heart, that is not necessarily inspired by a poem, but by a poet, and then one that is inspired by a poem. So I'm going to do the poem one, and then if there is time at the end, I will do the other one because, you know, can't get enough Titus. So I'm going to put him on the board, and let me get his, I don't remember which one it was. It was in my box. Give me a second. Ah, his poem was Count That Day Lost by George Eliot. And Debson, since you just popped on, I've had a lot of questions on AutoRank recently, so I'm just running through the AutoRank on the famous poem, so that's because there was three different people, and they were feeling pretty crappy that they can't get past like a three. I'm like, listen, some of my favorite famous poets don't rank crap. And so the two that we've had up so far were both a one. So hopefully they'll feel better and know that I'm not full of crap, just because the algorithm's a little whatever. And it's an excellent tool. It's a fun little thing to write too. But, you know, they were feeling pretty bad. So if it's going to hinder people, they just need to know to shake it off, do you? And whatever it is, you know, the numbers are secondary. So his poem that he wrote to, which I don't have up, which I don't know why I don't have up. Oh, because he didn't give me the link. By George Eliot. That one scored a one. And I think that one's a short one. And let me just grab it. So I'll read the short ones, but not the long ones. But again, scatterbrained. I am very much, very much scatterbrained today.
That was a Jeff Beck song.
Was it? Okay. But feel free. I know, Deb, that you are masterful at AutoRank. And by the way, I know I just ran the famous one that you put that you brought, and the highest one of them all by far, the only one that even got close to a 10. So that's awesome. But you know, tell me your thoughts and how you use it.
I use it personally to better to try and score higher than my last one. Like when I judge contests, I don't look. I don't write the poem just for the number. Like, I'll write the poem. And I think what it is for me is I have so many of their, quote, great words in my head at this point that I score high. But again, I don't put any more credence in it than it allows me to try and outscore my own last poem. Because some of my 10s I thought were great, and then I get there and there's 99 people that's higher because they rounded off at 10, and, you know, you might score 13 or 14. So I agree with you that it's a good tool for yourself, but that if I grabbed the pen and bled on the page, it would – like the one when my father died, I think that's a one. So AutoRank doesn't
really
seem to
be. I love that poem, by the way.
Thank you. And it seems like the more true emotion is there, the lower it scores. So, you know, It just depends on what you're looking for. And again, if you know how you make it a game, you try to beat yourself. That's about as much credence as I put in there.
And now, like I said, it's a fun tool, and that you could also use it if you think that, or you've been told that you're writing as too many cliches. You can, you know, tweak that number alone and not worry about the rest of it. I mean, it serves a purpose. The poem that I picked for today that scored a one, when I first got on here, I don't know, 6 years ago or something, it was like a 4-point something. Then it was a 3.7. I haven't looked at it in like 4 years, and now it's a one. So as the pool of amateur poets, you know, gets bigger, the numbers get all over the place. It's crazy. But again, a fun tool to say. And if you know that when you write, you're in a mood. Some of us get in a rut. I get in a rut, and sometimes I am all, you know, in the darkness, and there are only so many hues of dark you can do, you know. So if I've used it a lot, I might tweak something there. That is my dog, again, stealing food out of the pantry now, but I'm not chasing her down. I apologize for the loudness. Okay, so Count That Day Lost by George Eliot is a poem that Titus was inspired by, and it is short, and it goes like this. If you sit down at set of sun and count the acts that you have done, and counting find one self-denying one word that eased the heart of him who heard, one glance most kind that fell like sunshine where it went, then you may count that day well spent. But if, through all the livelong day, you've cheered no heart by yea or nay, if, through it all, you've nothing done that you can trace that brought the sunshine to one face, no act most small that helps some soul and nothing cost, then count that day as worse than lost. First of all, that is absolutely smile. I mean, absolutely fabulous, and makes me smile. As far as an inspiration poem, how kind is that? That if you can't make somebody smile, if you can't do something so little that it brightens somebody's day a tiny bit, then you just wasted a whole entire day. Like, what a wonderful way to count something worthwhile. So I love that he chose that. And his poem is on, and that got a one, by the way. So far, everybody has scored a one for the famous people. I am not ranking anybody's actual writing because no. But so he is on the board with Death Be Nothing More, and I am going to hit play. Or I think I am. I can't actually see it. Give me a second. Here it is.
Death be nothing more. Seen on the face of those each morn, who countless times have always worn their saddest day, while no denying death it stalks, a gaze for which their long-lost walks give not one say, such was the greeting which has led to you on your way. Not much was said, but for the longest moment yet, the part you play, your mind is set to live through it. There's nothing you can do, I doubt, if it's worth giving life without, you must admit. Your death will be nothing more than time which stopped for life before.
You see, and that's how I do happy, by the way, is in darkness, because it's the underlying sentiment is basically the same thing, only that this is in my wheelhouse of emotion. In that, if you're going to dwell on your misery every day of your life, you're already dead, and, you know, passing through that doorway to the other plane is inconsequential, you know, because you were dead long before that. If you don't have anything that, you know, seems worthwhile, if all you do is seen on the face of those each morn who countless times have always worn their saddest day. And, you know, having suffered through depression and on and off continually probably for the rest of my days, it sucks, you know. But to go through every moment without even the slightest desire to stop dwelling, because when you're dwelling in whatever caused you great pain, you know you're alive. At least you're feeling something. And sometimes that something is better than the nothing that can consume us. But I love the how he kind of flipped that. Instead of the whole, if you can make, you know, if you can share just one smile, then the day is worth it. And this is like, listen, if you can't crawl out of your own butt crack, you know, then you're already wasting your days, you know, which I have. Okay, he would never say butt crack because he's all refined and fabulous, but, you know, my layperson's interpretation of fabulous poetry is what it is. I mean, no offense, Titus, you know I love you. But I absolutely love that because I am all about, you know, interpreting those shadows. And so I it's beautiful. I mean, he makes even that side of things sound just elegant and fabulous. So, Rack and Tor, what are your thoughts?
The dark side of the moon. You're channeling him a little bit when you're saying what you're saying. I don't think he would say, but I'm sitting there in my head going, yeah, but I think he'd say arse. So, you know, I'm kind of with you on that thought, though. And I like how he took the idea, too. The inspiration from the piece, the perspective of it, you know, that's what makes it a very complex thought. And you know, it's hard to see if that's the mood that someone is in when you're speaking to them. I don't know how much they'll get out of the poem, but other people that are already a little more enlightened, I guess, and don't walk around with that cloud over their heads will appreciate it more for what it is, because I think we all know someone that's like that. You know, it really hits home, and it's a little dark and emotional, but you know, it's really very truthful, you know, and that's what makes it lovely to me, the observation of it. You know, and even if it is, you know, as a poet, a little exaggerated, I think, too, you know, you still kind of want to tweak someone's nose a little bit, you know, why are you always so grumpy, even when they're not, you know, that sometimes that's enough to get them out of their funk. But, you know, he doesn't touch on that, I guess. I'm sorry. I'm ranting.
Leave You're me fine. Be. You're absolutely fine. And you know, and sometimes – If it's something that's going to pass quickly, it does just take a little bit of, you know, I see you, snap out of it. But sometimes it doesn't. And it just depends on how much time you want to spend there. Me, I'm a dweller, and I know I'm a dweller, and I hate that about myself. You know, I am an imperfect person. So I can absolutely understand that way to be and the logic behind it just being a waste of time. So that is my dark shadows are one of many, because I am, you know, just engulfed by these things. And Wayne, your thoughts?
This is another fine poem that he wrote, and a good recording. The recording was wonderful. The last couple I like the best. It's a good way to end the poem. He said, your death will be nothing more than time which stopped your life before. That was a great way to end the poem. And just another fine poem by Tony. He's different and he writes pretty good. And I like it a lot.
Does.
Good job, Tony.
He absolutely does. And Sky, your thoughts?
I thought it was an excellent piece. I really liked the butts of the longest moments. Yeah, it's the part that you play. I think it really kind of goes into the what you were speaking about before, about your mind is set to live through it. I think there is a bit of germination, and there's that idea, right? You wake up and you say, it's going to be a good day. And you make it so, whether, and you know, it's in your perspective, things could either be completely terrible, or there could be a light in that terrible, and it's really sometimes a lot of mind power. Sometimes you just gotta, you can't do it. You just say, okay, I'm gonna set to, this is where my mind power sets, and I'm gonna have to wash myself in the sadness and grieve for a bit, or whatever feeling that is. And then sometimes you say, okay, we're not gonna do this. But it is. It is in your mental capacity. And I think that he kind of said that there at the end. Really well done.
Absolutely. And Hatter, your thoughts?
Yeah, check your life at the door. you can't, nobody can afford to be the most miserable person to be around. And that's the first rule. But, yeah, well written. Totally agree with the conversation, the chat.
to quote Cher from Moonstruck, snap out of it.
Oh, my goodness. And Deb, your thoughts?
You know, I remember this one from a few years back, and I had said to him at that time that he seems like such an old soul, and he actually said that, yeah, he thought that he would fit quite comfortably in like the 14th and 18th centuries. And I agree, he's got such class and style when he writes the poems. And this one, such was the greeting which had led you on your way, not much was said. And it's like you think about people sitting in a room pushing buttons on their cell phone instead of talking to the people they're in the room with, or you walk by them on the street but nobody notices each other because everybody's got their faces down in the phones. And it's like zombies, and instead of brains, it's electronics, you know, and it's like, what difference is it going to make later, because you weren't really interacting with people anyway, and your death will be nothing more than time which stopped your life before, you know, just you're gone. And you weren't, like I said, you weren't really doing a lot of participating to begin with, so it just seems pretty potent. And it's a multiple award winner, too, so.
Well, of course, really it's awesome. Tony. But, yeah, that reminds me of, I went to a concert last month, and there are so many people recording the thing and looking at their screen. I'm like, you are missing the actual You can watch that later, you know. Like,
yeah.
You have to be present in the moment. You know, there are certain things you can't just, you can't relive it if you never lived it in the first place, even if you were there. You know, so it's just like, y'all, I can't. But something that Sky said, you know, reminded me of my philosophy, because I'm just going to wax poetic on everything, whatever, we're good. My philosophy on being good enough or being the best you can be, because everybody is, you know, they disappoint themselves because today I was not the best me I could be. And I'm like, listen, some days the best you can be is to get out of bed at all. And if that's the best you can do that day, then you did your best. There's no fault there. You know, sometimes things are difficult. Sometimes we are not in the right headspace to be all peppy and fabulous and, you know, 100 things ticked off on that to-do list, you know. Sometimes if you can take a shower and that's all you can manage, it's good enough. You know, so you know, this just reminded me of that there's so many people that feel useless because they do it to themselves. You know, we all are in our negative self-talk that we'll sit there, well, I can't do anything, and I can't even be bothered with this. Well, you know what? Sometimes you can't, and that's okay. And so, you know, just have to throw that out there, because sometimes the world is a difficult place to traverse.
Limitation.
And
if you don't have bad days, you can't enjoy the good.
What?
If you don't have bad days, you can't enjoy the good days.
This is true. See, this is my philosophy. I mean, if everybody lived at plus or minus one away from that neutral zero, then what kind of emotion is that? That's all, you know? So while the misery sucks, that allows for the euphoria, and that carries you through those you know, less than stellar days. So I'm right there with you, Wayne. That's awesome. Okay, so I have Pee-wee on the board. I will put him back on the board because, you know, the board is busy today. I'm all excited. And so I'm going to put him back here so everybody doesn't have to search. And his inspirational poem was Edgar Allan Poe, A Man After My Own Heart, this Pee-wee. He chose Annabelle Lee. Now, that is a long poem, so I ain't reading it. But it did auto-rank a one. And that is fabulous storytelling, fabulous flow and rhyme, and you know, there's no denying it's a great poem. It's a great, it's just a great piece of writing, and still a one. So, you know, don't feel bad if you have one, because most of mine are, so we're good. You're in good company. You know, do not fret. Do not let that stifle you. You're awesome to whoever may be listening. And so he needs a reader. Miss Deb, would you read him for me?
Absolutely.
You're awesome. I've like read six things so far and my brain hurts.
Well, we can't have that. Okay, so this is TLG by Pee Wee Cushion. And here we go. Many a year before now, in grove in a thicket of bramble woods, I spied the fairest of all nymphs I'd seen, so being called her TLG. Are her sight unbridled desire, raging my spirit in frenetic ire, because me she wouldn't see. Our lives oft were intersected in my grove in the thicket. My desires grew like a ringing fire, yet still me she wouldn't see. Oh, the nymph TLG. I would have given her my heaven for her to be with me. So in my wanton lust, many years ago, in my grove inside the thicket, the vines from the ground rose up, imprisoning me in sight of TLG. I begged and pleaded to her most wondrous beauty, yet not an ounce of pity she wouldn't even free me. 'Twas just the gods had predicted. Stuck alone, imprisoned in my grove in the thicket. As every day went by, the lovely TLG would walk right past, even taunting me. Yes, she taunted me with a rose. She strutted by front of me, then did pick it, and left me for dead in my grove in the thicket. Yes, she never cared and left me to die in my grove, in the thicket. End poem.
Well, that's heartbreaking. I mean, there's something to be said to, you know, I don't know, I don't want to call it love at first sight. I want to call it when, is it attraction? Is it, there's a word, there's like a very precise word for what I'm trying to think of, but it is not coming up to my brain at the moment. So my apologies, Mr. PB. But, you know, when you feel called to someone, you know, whether you see them every day and it grew on you and you found that some comfort in the fact that this one thing remains, your paths cross, or there is just, you kind of, your spirits collide in passing, and I know it's all abstract concepts of whatever, but, you know, sometimes you just feel pulled to somebody that you don't know for no reason, and it's not always,
infatuation.
Yeah, well, you know, infatuation, I think, takes a little bit more than that, but yeah, but you know, you to love someone from afar, and
yeah.
It's bad enough when they either don't notice or don't acknowledge or are kind, but it's just unrequited. But when they're going to sit there and eyeball you and flirt a little bit from afar and do all this stuff knowing that you're falling all over yourself, well, that's just kind of mean, you know? so that's just not nice. But you know, it's, I love the way you wrote this, and it does have that kind of rhyming flow to it. Which pulls you through all the way to the end. And I was not expecting the taunting and being left for dead. So I kind of enjoy a little dramatic twist in the end of things, because I'm that kind of girl. I mean, not that I want anybody left for dead, but I wasn't expecting anything to go there. So I like the surprise. So Deb, you read it. What are your thoughts?
For one, I think it, as in correlation to the poem that he chose, I say, wow, he picked up that emotion brilliantly. And like the repeat of in my thicket, I can't find stuck alone, imprisoned, my grove in the thicket, left for dead in my grove in the thicket. Let me die in my, I mean, it's just, there's something that drives it, that it's like a, that hammering in that nail down to where you're left to die. And the whole time you can feel the ache of wanting the person that could care less, even worse, like you said, not just care less, but sitting there taunting and, you know, it's just, and it's a brevity and it's very powerful to a much longer poem. So it takes skill to be able to relay the same powerful emotion with so many less words. And it was my honor to be its reader.
And Hatter, your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm lost for words other than it's just professional. It's a poet. This is so good. The TLC or the TLG. TLC?
TLG.
Oh.
Am I the only one wondering if there's really a TLG or if it would just rhymed?
And I wonder if asked, and he said it's the bane of his existence, so I'm assuming that's real.
Oh, wow. And they don't reciprocate. Wow.
It's heartbreaking.
Yeah, heartbreaking. Yeah.
And Raconteur, your thoughts?
Yeah, I really enjoyed the emotion in it. It was, you know, deep, but, you know, that TLG, I was kind of waiting for it to become an acronym or something, that it was and not a person's initials or something. No. It felt like there was something more behind it that he was going to reveal in the end. So I was kind of distracted by that a little bit, and I thought it took away a little bit from the rest of the poem because, you know, it was deeply emotional and left for dead, and the metaphor of him, like, in the grove, in the thicket, you know, life not going forward. He's stuck in that place, and he's not going anywhere, and he kind of knows he's not going anywhere, and he can't do anything about it. So, you know, that was really torturous for me. I've got a whole section of pieces like to the similar thought, so I really related to this piece a lot. You know, I really enjoyed it, Pee Wee. I did.
Awesome.
He didn't mention in the notes what TLG was, if it was her initials or if it was like a nickname or.
Nope.
Yeah.
And Wayne, what are your thoughts?
Well, I wrote, this poem is as good as the Oreo cookie I'm eating. This is it's wonderful, right? And I like the way I like bringing the last three stanzas with the words "my grove in the thicket." This poem is fine, and then, like the lovely TLG. I don't know what it means, but anyway, TLG. Great poem, wonderful ending. Way to go, like Poe. Thanks, Pee Wee.
And Pee Wee answered you, Rack. He said, "Thank you, everyone. It was a rush job, Rack. It's the only reason I didn't have an acronym." So, you know, since you can't read it, maybe that'd help you out some. So, I have Skye on the board, and I'll put her down here again. And her famous poem that she brought was The Double Image by Anne Sexton. And that is a very long poem. So, again, not reading it, but the link is on there. And she did not score a 1. She scored a 4.9. Woo! So I'm kind of all excited because so far all of them have been a 1. All of the so I'm all excited that we're getting some movement. Yay! And so are you ready, Sky?
Yes.
You
so,
are up.
In a very long poem, it's so I actually, this was actually from Monday, but I switched it. So it is inspired by this poem because I had been doing some Anne Sexton reading, and one thing that I do with this poem, it's about her struggling through her mental health and how that affected her relationships with her children, and then she even brings in her own mother there. And so it made me think of, you know, how different trauma trickles and how people can have secondary PTSD and their own PTSD and struggle through their own trauma, but also their parents' trauma. And when I wrote this poem on whatever day I wrote it, for a Monday night, I think it was Monday, for Deb's show for you, I had been writing, I've been in a box of, like, rhyming short poetry, but I couldn't bring you that. So I was like, okay, what am I going to do? What am I going to do for a pretty bird to be inspired? So not only is this inspired by this poet, I thought, well, you know, one thing I really admire about Pretty Bird's poetry is her confessional poetry, her spoken word type poetry. So I had to, like, kind of don the hat of that, which is always more honest poetry than I do, or open poetry than I usually do. So this, all that, keep all that stuff in mind. And this is my poem. This is called A Mouthful of Grief by Skydark Cone. There are pages I've torn from books, frayed teeth once fused to spine, tiny spectral motifs glittering in the dark. I bunch them in fists, cram them back down my throat, squatters in stomach with unpaid rent and signage upon their backs, evicted, multiple offenders, always choking upward, a stint of bile ringing in the hollow of cheeks, putridity in all those lofty spaces, tongue travels, those gaps of rattan cloth, trues burrowed out. They needed room to sleep, and since they would not rouse on thin lips and peeling lines, they chose a mouth of caverns, deep and stark. There they grew, a mold of moss and soil, a secondary trauma fitted with its own, brambled in souring ink and blankless timbers. A seed of irony, impregnable, yet breeding and breeding and breeding. A mouth full of rape, a carnival wheel of iron hands and gritted smiles. A mouth full of poverty, of maplewood bats and phantom bombs. Stale vomit on a rigid body, the word daddy, a stranger to his skin. Which are hers and which are mine? I, the sack once in her body, now living on earth in a ground she half planted and half tended. I, a compost of pages, ever blooming, ever swallowing, a mouth full of grief. End poem.
Oh, my goodness, Sky, you're killing me.
This is stunning, like stunning, 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 stunning. From your verbiage, from your thin lips and peeling lines and peeling like the ringing of a bell that just hangs in the air, lingering when you don't want them to, just on their own, from hating yourself a little bit, from putting it on paper and not wanting to read it, from carrying who you were and who you meant to other people and how that affects who you are and who you become and how you see them and their pain. And it is, this is destruction, and it is freaking beautiful. I had to suck it back, by the way. It took me a second, because it is a very powerful piece. Every little verse, Every line, practically, it's stifling, you know, and it's gorgeous. All the things that you look at with a lucid mind, but you can't stop it anyway. You know, it's the irrationality of emotion that comes through in these very tangible ways that you've depicted one by one by one, and it's glorious. And of course, I'm saving it because I must. And Hatter, your thoughts?
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah, you wrote this, guy?
Yeah, the poem from that it was from, and I was kind of rushing because I to get to the reading, but and sex and struggle with mental illness, through her life and with her children, you know, there was a lot of similarities with my own mother. So that's where it came from, and then the secondary trauma of that. So
yeah. It was a good effect having it. Everything was tasty, and you're tasting everything. I thought that was a good angle. Usher could. Very well done. Compost of pages ever blooming, I swallow in a mouthful of grief. Fill in the mouth. Very good.
Thank you. Thank you.
And Bracken Tor, your thoughts.
Yeah, I got to use the same word you did because the first thing that came to mind was stunning. You're opening, I have to call it a salvo because this hits and hits and hits. The idea of people like both yourself and Pretty Bird that respect books, the idea of destroying the book and ripping out a page is offensive enough, but use it in that context that you did was simply brilliant. I mean, you always have like nuances and things that I think escape a lot of people, but that hit me over the head like an anvil. I mean, that was just wow. And then, you know, you went on and it just got deeper and deeper for me. I thought this was absolutely amazing. I really enjoyed it a lot.
Wayne, your thoughts?
Yeah, I like this poem. This poem has a lot of wonderful phrases in it. Each one is a mouthful of grief. Like the stanza, a mouthful of poverty, of maplewood bat, and phantom bomb. That's wonderful. It is a seed of irony, impregnable, yet breeding and breeding and breeding. All the phrases are nice and interesting to read. I think you did a great job, this guy. Good job.
Thank you, Ryan.
And Deb, your thoughts and then your poems on the board.
Awesome. Thank you. Sky, from the first line to the last, this is like it's total brilliance. It's hard-hitting. I agree with Rack with the beginning there. There are pages I've torn from the book's frame, teeth once fused to spine. Just the thought of that is like gives me the chills. I bunch them in fists and cram them back down my throat like that lump you can't swallow type of thing. But it's just, my goodness, any piece. They needed room to sleep, and since they would not rouse on thin lips and peeling lines, they chose a mouth of caverns deep and stark. I think Hatter said that the repeat of the things to do with the mouth are like really strong. And then stale vomit, even in the middle of this powerfully gripping emotional piece, I couldn't help but be taken away to that shower from your birthday party for just a moment there. Who knew we both would read a poem with vomit in it tonight? Go figure. But I, the sack once in her body, now living underneath in the ground, she half planted and half tended. And that is like, I want to cry. Really, really powerful, impressive.
Thank you, Deb.
I fully, fully concur. Now, Miss Deborah Lee, you brought us a poem called Wintertime, and it is by Robert Louis Stevenson, and that is the only poem of the whole entire night of famous poems that even came close to a 10 with a 9.9, so that's amazing because I really struggled. I put Shakespeare and other things up there. It's all one or two, and so I'm kind of impressed that you found one. It's a 9.9, so that's awesome. So it's all you whenever you're ready to read.
Okay, now you told me to read mine, or did you want me to read his too?
No, you read yours.
Okay, that's what I thought, just making sure. Okay. Now, this is the one I wrote in response called Painting with White Paintbrush Strokes, and that's my backyard there.
Well, that's beautiful.
Autumn falls to a winter's breeze, amber rays shine on the top of trees. Ice-kissed branches carry a ton and glitter neath flickers of sun. Falling snowflakes blanket the land, two squirrels snuggle for shelter, and frozen nest holds a shaking bird on a shrine to Jack Frost's blizzard. Winds whistle like a violin, chill bumps parade on naked skin. Rise, shower, rest, step outside, unlock the car and climb inside. Drive into town for milk and bread, down salted streets, a snowplow spread. Walk to store's door, catch snow on tongue, breathe frosty air into my lungs. In red scarf, gloves, black hat, and coat, checked items off my shopping note. Rock salt, peanut butter, and jam, a pound of cheese, and thick sliced ham. Grab pails for snowballs, roll a bunch, build a snowman, and then eat lunch. We play and laugh into the night. Sun sinks down, and moon hangs a light. And pause.
So I live in the land of I don't do winter, but this is beautiful. I mean, that looks like a heck of a storm and a whole lot of snow, like all the branches are way down, but it's beautiful. Kind of reminds me of the Oak Hotel and the original Stanley Kubrick's The Shining, like just when they're panning out into like the wilderness, it looks just like that, but it's so beautiful. And I did not know, because apparently I am, you know, dumb in the sun, I did not even realize at all of after the blizzard up in West Virginia, like 3 years ago maybe, that it actually glitters like that. Like it looks fake. It's like it looks like absolute glitter, and it's beautiful. Like I was like stunned. He like sent me this video, and I was like watching it over and over and over. It's like just twinkling, and I was like, how beautiful. And all the things that you depict in here are very, very vivid. The whole, you know, you still have to go out and do what you got to do, and you got to buy the stuff, but you're also making, you know, the snowballs and doing the snow thing. And I've always wanted to do that. I would die in the snow. So no, the last time I was in snow, I was 3 and I was fine. But now I have sun-filtered bones that don't do cold. But it makes me want to, you know, so long as I don't have to drive, because I can drive in at like a category 1 hurricane, like it's nothing, lean into the wind, but I won't drive on snow. I just can't do it. I've seen too many unfortunate, you know, icy accident news flashes that I just can't, but it kind of make me want to, because everything just, it looks quiet and just beautiful, you know?
It's a winter wonderland.
It really is. I mean, the picture is stunning. So Rack, what are your thoughts?
Thank yeah, you, I really enjoy
You're
this sharing your backyard, metaphorically, of course. You know, you really brought the weather. There's something about when the snow takes over. There's a bleakness to it. I won't call it a cleansing, but, you know, sometimes it feels that way, like, you know, out with the old, we're wiping everything out and starting over. The white just blankets everything. I really enjoyed it.
Thanks, Rack. It's that time of year when everybody's yard looks the same, because it's all white and pristine. And Pretty Bird, just one note. Snow, even after it's done falling and it's just there, it has a sound, and it's sort of like, you have to relate to this. When you open your freezer, and if you're standing there trying to figure out what to take out to thaw for dinner, and there's that soft crackling noise, and a soft, it's not even a hiss, it's like a crackle. So you got the glittering flickers from the sun and the crackle noises and the soft hush, and it's really a pretty cool phenomenon. Anyway.
See, that's awesome. And Wayne, what are your thoughts?
Well, I said this poem reads like the R.L. Stevenson poem that just down below it. The rhyme is similar and the flow is perfect. Great details and a wonderful mood, he said. You read it nice, and there was a hue of contentment in this poem. It was kind of great to kind of get you to kick back and feeling good. Good job with this poem, Deb. I liked it a lot.
Thank you, Wayne. I'm glad you're feeling better.
Me too.
And Sky, what do you think?
Well, I don't know if you know what's going on up here in New Hampshire, but last week we just got hit and hit and hit and hit, and this week we're going to get hit more. And I'm right done with snow, Deb, but your poem makes me want to love it more, but I'm about done. I'm going to be honest with you. This was really beautiful. I love the most this section here. The wind whistles like a violin, because there is that beautiful, like, I don't know, it's like a hollow music sound, and it's very crisp, and I love how you described it, like, there with the whistling of the violin. And, there were so many, down salted streets and snowplow spread. I think New Jersey and New Hampshire aren't far away from each other. I think, I would never be able to live out of New England. As much as I complained by the end of, like, March about how I don't want any more snow, it's been very light this year, actually. It started hitting in February. I don't know what happened. It just all came in February. But as much as you get sick of it, I wouldn't have it any other way. And I think there's an appreciation in here with that I can really feel and connect to as well. And I like how you brought in the fun part too, the Jack Frost blizzards and the snowball fights and all those things that you can do and enjoy and enjoy. Really well done.
Thank you, Sky.
Rock, did I get you already? Yes, right? Okay, so Hatter, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, regular winter wonderland. That's remarkable, the crackle of the ice. I never heard of that before.
Yeah.
Or the snow. Is it the snow just settling from the weight? Or
a little bit of the settling, a little bit of melting. If the wind blows, there's like this shh noise, and it's just, it is gorgeous. And it's even more gorgeous when you're in the heat, looking out the window.
it does.
It has swoosh noises. You'd be surprised the different sounds that snow makes. People think that, it's just fallen and it's not. You don't even hear that tap, tap, tap like you do from rain, but you hear a different sound. So, like, it's really awesome. And yeah. But thank you.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to insert one more comment that I did today at school. I'm the only teacher who's does this because they're all staring at me like I'm crazy. But I went down, we have a hill at school, and they do. They were all in a group staring at me like, why is she doing that? But I went down sledding with the kids. I brought in my snow pants. I work with a couple students that need a little extra help. And I brought in my snow pants. I wasn't 100% today, but I got on that sled, and I closed my eyes. I thought I was going to die. And there I am, a bunch of fourth graders, sledding down the hill, enjoying the snow.
I bet the kids were thrilled. They'll remember that, that's for sure.
Yeah. And then I had, like, every child, this way. And I'm like, no more. Can't handle it.
That's awesome. That's absolutely awesome. Hey, Hatter, are you ready? I have you on the board. Hatter picked As Long As Your Eyes Are Blue by Banjo Patterson, and he is back with the rest of us at a famous poet score of a 1. So it's a fabulous poem, but he is going to read what he wrote in inspiration. So you're up on the board whenever you're ready.
Okay, I hope I can read it. Okay, let's see. There it is. With the
with this black screen, I can't. I'm going to have somebody read it, please.
Is Deb, you up for it? You still with us, Deb?
Yes, I'm sorry. I was headed to the poem. I can do that. I'll be there in a second.
I love that picture, Heather.
Thank you, Deb.
Okay. Oh, that one's banjos. Let me go back again. Sorry. Hatter. There it is. Okay. It's called The Tales. Tell the Tales of Evermore. Banjo Patterson. But by Jay Hatter. Here we go. Within the lines of a kingdom and the poles
I think you read banjos first, as long as your eyes are blue. It should be up there also.
It's okay. It's fine. If you want that one read first, it's fine.
Either way, I'm so sorry.
Okay.
Just doing double duty, Deb.
Not a problem. Okay, this one is As Long As Your Eyes Are Blue by Banjo Patterson. And here we go. Wilt thou love me, sweet, when my hair is gray and my cheeks shall have lost their hue? When the charms of youth shall have passed away with your love as an old proved true? For the looks may change and the heart may range and the love be no longer found with our love with truth in the years of youth and away to the years beyond. Oh, I love you, sweet, for your locks of brown and the blush on your cheek that lies. But I love you most for the kindly heart that I see in your sweet blue eyes. For the eyes are signs of the soul within, of the heart that is leal and true. And mine own sweetheart, I shall love you still just as long as your eyes are blue. For the locks may bleach and the cheeks of peach may be reft of their golden hue, but mine, oh, sweetheart, I shall love you still, just as long as your eyes are blue. And headed back to Hatter's. And this is Tell the Tales of Evermore by Jay Hatter. Within the lines of a kingdom and the poles of its shores, the wind turns to watch the hills tell the tales of evermore. Walking nearest to the furthest point, stride my angry burning trees. All has stopped before the dunes pushing them to the sea. Climbing back to a pillowed hole, searching for my one way in. Nothing waits too long to be found, then drug back in. Carried across on feathered tail sits a place he might have won. Sounds that fill familiar nights from the shadow of Banjo Patterson. End the poem.
Thank you, Deb.
Pleasure, Hatter.
So look at you telling tales. I'm loving that. You know, I don't know. I guess after I heard Banjo's poem, I was expecting something lovely and light, and it's not. And I love that. Again, I love little twists and surprises when I'm all unexpectedly all pulled into things. So fabulousness. Great job reading that, Deb. And sorry that I keep on putting you on the spot. Just read everything. But I literally read like six things before you hopped on here, and I'm just my eyes are not. I'm scatterbrained tonight, is what it is. And I'm climbing back to a pillowed hole, searching for the one way in. Nothing waits too long to be found and drug back in. You know, me and the way my mind goes, there is just the shadows in this that I just find delightful. And maybe that sounds weird. It's okay. I'm weird. It's fine. But I kind of love that. You know, I love that this is kind of a a tribute story? Is this about the way he writes altogether, that he's so compelling, or is this your way of writing in emulation?
Well, we AP showed up with banjos, Patterson, to one of our shows and read it and immediately sounded familiar. And even Deborah said that I had a style like his. I can't remember how you said it, Deb, but I noticed it also. So I just wrote in the style, basically.
Which is awesome. I love that. I tend to gravitate towards both your wistful pieces and your more shadowy pieces. Mm-hmm. Sweet Jesus, they changed everything to black. That is not okay. So sorry. I just opened up my messages and I'm like, what the heck is this nonsense? Stop with the shenanigans already. They were beige a second ago. I swear they were. Okay. Like, whew, that just took my eyes right out of my head. So I apologize for being sidetracked. But I love the feeling of this. I do. Like I said, you know, carried across on feathered trails. Say goodnight, Deb. It sits a place he might have won. Sounds that fill familiar nights from the shadow of Banjo Patterson. And even if you don't know who it is, it still has a kind of ominous and eeriness to it at the end there. Like you know, he could be anybody. But the fact that you know, he's a wordsmith is fabulous. So, Raconteur, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, to me, the familiarity in the beginning was almost like a Beatles song. Talking about, we used to love me with my hair. I don't know. It just sounded very hauntingly familiar. It's probably a common sentiment. He probably got a low score on cliche. But anyway, the whole thing was lovely. And then your response to it gave it a completely different tone, like Pretty Bird said. I like the idea of it being kind of a response and at the same time a tribute to it, you know, in the shadow of Banjo Patterson. It was great.
Thanks, Zach. Yeah, that first stanza is like more like Led Zeppelin, Battle of Evermore.
Oh, okay.
But yeah. Good. Thank you.
I thought this was an excellent piece, and actually my favorite part was the opening stanza, because I liked the idea of the storytelling setting within the lines of a kingdom. And the pulls of its shores, the idea of that, those pulls pulling you into the story, the wind turns to watch the hills. Love that personification. The wind turns to watch the hills, tell the tales of evermore. I thought it was very whimsical. And then again, it took a turn a little bit. But that beginning was just, I really loved it. I felt like I was settling in and I was reading up, ready to get, like, the preamble of a book. You know, you start to read the foreword about what's going to happen. It kind of pulls you in. I thought it was done really well.
Yeah, I like that beginning one, too. Thanks.
And Wayne, your thoughts, and then you are on the board.
The Australian poet Banjo Patterson was a favorite of AP's. And I think I won a tic-tac-toe contest by answering Banjo's poem. So I remember it's pretty good. And he did a good job with this poem, and AP and Banjo both be proud of this, right? Carried across the feather trails with eyes of blue. That's what I got out of it. And great job, Hatter, and I liked it a lot.
Thanks, Wayne.
You did not bring me a famous poem, but...
Okay. Yeah, I didn't know the show was going to happen until about an hour before it started. And I said, well, I started thinking what the best input was. So I just wrote down my train of thoughts with this poem. I kind of wrote down what I was thinking. So it's kind of
a tribute to all.
Called Greatest Dead Poet. You ready to hear it?
Mm-hmm.
Called Greatest Dead Poet. Which dead poet do I like the best and why? One that comes to mind is the poet Robert Bly. But as I think about it, I just don't know. It could possibly be Frost or Edgar Allan Poe. There was a poet that wasn't a literary fake. That was a poet by the name of William Blake. And then there's the poet that everybody liked, but I'm not sure about the poet John Updike. How about the poet that no one beats? He's got a great name, William Butler Yeats. or about the point that they were going to vote for. I guess he could be president, Walter Savage Landor. One point that made a big-time news, that was a fine point, Langston Hughes. Can't forget about the FEMA report and the award she won. That would be the one and only Emerson Dickerson. And then there's the portrait that was reported was fat. Yeah, that's right. I'm talking about Sylvia Plath. And don't forget about the port they like the party. I'm talking about the port named Thomas Hardy. And but putting all jokes aside, there's only one great, there's one I greatly adhere, and that's none other than the great William Shakespeare. Ian?
You know, I am sure that whoever reads this might pick out a few they've never heard before. I mean, you went all out, didn't you? That's awesome. You know, now had I had this like a couple of hours early, I could have pulled a poem from everybody and see where they ranked. But I love this. I love that that it is absolutely a Wayne poem, which always makes me smile. Like, I hate it when you need a reader and, like, you don't have time to record it and you can't be on here because nobody reads you like you do. They just don't do it justice. But I love that. I love your humor. I love, I do. I love the way you always make me smile. It is just awesome. Me I don't think that there are any poems that make people smile that I write. I am not a happy-go-lucky writer. as a person, yes. As a writer, not so much. So I absolutely fall into it, Wayne. I do. I had to chuckle at then there's the poetress whose poetry was fat. Yeah, that's right. I'm talking Sylvia Plath. You know, I gotta love it. How do you not love that? That's just fabulous. It's fabulous the way you put humor and everything. It's a gift. A gift which I do not personally have. So therefore, I have great appreciation for said gift. So Rack and Tour, what are your thoughts?
I think it's convenient that he was able to write to so many poets that are already dead. He didn't have to kill anyone. you did a great job with it, Wayne. You really did. You made a lovely montage of poets. I enjoyed it.
Thank you very much.
Awesomeness. And Hatter, your thoughts?
Yeah. And your ending. I love the ending. You got to put Bill Shakespeare like you're on a first name basis.
Yeah. Billy.
I thought it was great that you listened to Thomas Hardy and Sylvia Plath and Dickinson. Yeah.
Thank
you, man.
Thank you, man.
Thank you,
Andrew.
Awesomeness. I have Tans on the board. She brought a poem that is on here somewhere. It's called On Death by Khalil Gibran. And I've never heard of him. So I am all thrilled that I get to go and delve in after the show because I didn't have time to do it before the show. And let me just see, where is it? Because I know I scored it on here somewhere. Where is it? Well, you know, this is going to drive me nuts because I know I did it. Bear with me. I'm a little slow. It's all right.
It's your phone that's slow.
Oh, now it's my brain that's slow. Here it is. He got a 1.4 for the on-death poem that was the inspiration. But I have her on the board. This is called In Death, In Life by Tans. And she's fabulous. There's an elegance to the way she writes. I suppose I should save my comments till the end after I actually read her. So it goes like this. Again, this is In Death, In Life by Tans. Oh, great slumber, how I turned my eyes from thee. Heavy is the garment of breath I wear, woven in uncertainty. This robe, then, this cloak of flesh, 'tis stitched with the thread of fear. I mourn within the marrow of midnight for a bright of day that left me bare. O great river, how I lost myself to thee. Against your tides and turmoil I tumbled, not knowing you were but the vein of enlightened seas. I carry then my naked vessel beneath your currents of wisdom. Skin me deep, drown me in the ocean of ethereal knowledge. May my surrender gift the freedom I seek.
Oh, great night, how I stumbled through the dark of thee. Blinded by the bright of moonlight at the grave of shattered stars, my soul still weeps. Drape then your veil of destined shadow across the longing bones of my endless sleep. Tis but within the depth of your unknown I shall soar the wondrous winds of life's release. See, elegant and fabulous. I haven't read her in a while, and I really must, because she's just beautifully, beautifully written. She has a grace about the way she writes that is just lovely, 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 lovely. And the sentiment in this, you know, it has a very old school feel with, you know, oh great slumber, oh great river, oh there's this kind of pleading and torment that comes through very vividly, even though the verbiage she uses, the language she uses, is a little softer. You know, heavy is the garment of breath I wear, woven in uncertainty. It's beautiful, beautiful, you know, and it just carries throughout this kind of really heavy feeling that sticks to your skin. And you got to love a poem that makes you feel something. So, Sky, what are your thoughts?
I thought it was done really well, too, when it had that old vintage feel, especially with the tint. There was spots of alliteration that I really thought kind of was subtly done. It wasn't overdone. It was just very subtle. And it wasn't even always together, you know. This cloak of flesh, tis stitched. You know, the tis stitched isn't technically alliteration, but there's that sense of likeness in the sound, which I think made it more rhythmical, even though it wasn't a rhyming poem, because of the bits of alliteration, the way the words kind of played off each other, it kind of had a very rhythmic feel. My favorite stanza was definitely, I mourn within the marrow of midnight. Again, she's got those three M's together, and I liked how she wrote, morning in the marrow of midnight. Just the marrow of midnight, I think that is absolutely brilliant. For the bright of day that left me there, and that contrast of stripping away of someone, and I thought that was just absolutely beautifully done. Definitely my favorite stanza. The entire piece was beautiful, of course, but that one really stood out to me. Really well done.
Absolutely. And Rock and Tour, your thoughts?
Sorry. I had a fight with the phone in the middle of it. Someone was trying to call, and I missed part of it. But the beginning was gorgeous. The whole thing was, from what I gathered, was kind of striking. I really enjoyed what I heard. I'm sorry I didn't hear the whole thing, Dan.
Oh, you're fine. And Wayne, your thoughts?
Yeah, I think it's great. It's when she's the metaphor of dying and drowning in a river and getting freedom out of it. And it's just your amazing response to the quote. If death could be as wonderful as this poem, it'd be an adventure to seek out instead of avoiding. I like it a lot. Drowning me in the ocean of ethereal knowledge, may my surrender give the freedom I seek. It's a wonderful way to put it and a great metaphor. And she did a great job of this. Beautiful job.
She really, really did. I fully concur. And Hatter, your thoughts?
Yeah, you're right. When, oh, great slumber, oh, great river. I mean, isn't that the way every fairy tale princess, when she's in despair, that's the way she talks to the mirror on the wall or the king or Prince Charming. Oh, Prince Charming. I thought that was a great touch to this. And you're right. It's just story. It's an old fable type way to write, or their intro, each stanza. I thought it was well done.
Absolutely, absolutely, absolutely. Okay, I have Tavis's homage to Thomas Chatterton on the board, and he has a SoundCloud, so I'm going to go ahead and put him up. But before I do that, do you guys have anything coming up in the next few days? Like, I don't see Sweet Pea on here for Thursday, so she may still be out. I'm looking on the board now, so I'm not sure if there's going to be anything on Thursday. I know Friday is
Liquid Damage and Open Poetry and Silly Jokes. And so what's going on Saturday, Hatter?
Hatterday Saturday. Oh, shoot. I named the prompt, and it's skipping my mind right now. Oh, gosh.
I got it. It's light.
Yeah. Like the bulb over my head. Thank you.
You're welcome. So that is what is coming up this week. And here we go with Titus.
Homage to Thomas Chatterton. This homage yours, 'tis profoundly acclaimed, Thomas Chatterton, here among those who were too young to die, awaiting gain, diligence offers nought, the romance chose youths like you, delegate the clause, keepers of undue silence, will still prolong making up for lost time, what little there was, half-hidden truths they hold, both right and wrong, such reverence the past whilst much it draws from the highest realm, blessed on the shelves of libraries, there the spirit which once yours, such sweet reminders these, it's where love delves, not fear, doth overwhelming wisdom bring, young sage again he thrives, still in passing.
So Thomas Chatterton, I'm going to read the little blurb he's got up here before his poem. It says, in 1763, an 11-year-old boy named Thomas Chatterton began publishing mature works of poetry. Before long, he was fooling the literary world by passing his works off as that of a non-existent 15th century poet named Thomas Rowley, which he did until unmasked by Horace Walpole. Okay, he died at 17. He started publishing at 11 years old, things that he passed off as a grown famous poet that was, you know, 100 years old, you know, 100 that was dead 100 years prior. What a feat is that? What a shame that he passed so young. You know, it is he killed himself at 17 apparently. But how amazing. You know, I have a 13-year-old, and if he wrote, you know, mature romantic poetry, not like lusty poetry, but just well-written, you know, to be able to pass off as a grown dead poet, I would be completely flabbergasted, you know, because...
What century was this?
This was the 16th century. This is the 1700s. Yeah, and I just at 11 years old. Could you imagine his entire career spanned 6 years, and he didn't even make it to proper adulthood. And so I'm gonna have to delve into that. First of all, it's a heartbreaking story, but you know, I'm glad that there was enough time to play that and to learn about him.
Well, you know
amazing.
What? Yeah, you know what that is? A world before TV or anything else. I mean, it's like the guys that stared at the skies all night, Copernicus and Kepler, and these guys, they lived for the midnight sky. I mean, what else was there to do?
Well, at 11 years old, I don't care what time you're living in, you know, you're skipping rock.
I'm not trying to take that away. The age, that is remarkable. That's a savant.
Oh, but yeah, people were prone to poetry and art much much more back in the day when that's all that you could do for fun besides get into trouble.
Yeah. Yeah, and not like at 11, but there was a high expectation for kids to grow up sooner back then and act.
Yeah, so they died by like 35, so they kind of had to do a thing.
Yeah, yeah, but yeah, it's remarkable what the feats that some of these guys back in the day. It's just the desire. At 11 years old.
I wonder if he knew he was dying.
He killed himself, so probably not.
Oh.
You know, I'm gonna say,
if he killed
that's not cold and callous. So sorry.
If he killed himself, I guess he saw it coming. Never mind.
Well, maybe, you know, at that time. But, yeah, I mean, how beautiful. The only young children that I have seen that are have taken to a talent in anything creative that is better than most adults has been music. My oldest son used to draw like nobody's business and win contests and whatnot in seventh grade. But as far as comparing him to, you know, being able to pass him off as, an artist of last century, maybe not so much, you know, but, I knew this kid who was just this little prodigy who could just play like nobody's business. And he was in what, fifth grade? But other than that, I've just never seen it. And to grasp language, the written language, and poetry is nuances of words and metaphors. So you not only have to grasp the language properly, you have to then be able to twist it and turn it and shade it and make it feel and breathe. And at 11 years old, I am just flabbergasted. I'm going to have to go and read his stuff. So, and anybody else have any thoughts on tonight? Oh, I wanted to go through. You gave me poems, Sky, at the beginning of the show. Let's see. Where are they? I know I did them. Okay. I found a...
When you did mention Emily Dickinson, so...
Yes.
He did.
Yeah, but you gave me two more. It was, I found a phrase to every thought, which is a two. So, again, you know, you are Dickinson so far is above the norm. And then The Grass by Dickinson is a 3. So we have the one 9.9, which, you know, kind of throws all the other ones off a little bit. But I'm thrilled that she found one that was that high rank, because I have yet to find one on my own. But what is it? 3 is the highest, I think. Everything else was 2.something, 1.4, and a whole bunch of ones. So for those of you who are worried,
4.7.
There you go. 4.7 is what she was, I think. Thank you. I knew there was something somewhere. So for those of you who are lamenting that your auto rank numbers are crap, that's okay. So are the grades. So we're good. It means absolutely nothing as far as if your poem makes somebody think or feel or pulls them into a story. You know, you put what you
now,
put out
scale,
there. What?
Is this still the scale that goes up to 10?
It's supposed to go up to 10, but really it goes up to 13. Yes, and starts at like -2
okay.
or some nonsense. It's supposed to be 1 to 10, but it ain't.
You know, I had questions about it. Questions about it a while ago. So I put in what I consider one of the best poet lyrics in a song is The Sounds of Silence, and it got a 6.1.
Which is a respectable number.
Well, see, I don't know if it's the same as it was back then, because it's been years.
It'll probably go down. Hold on a second. Let me pull up the lyrics. Give me 1 second. I will let you know. Because why not? We have a couple of minutes.
Yeah, it's an interesting exercise, Harold, because the thing behind it is what I would call AI. So if it's supposed to be constantly learning, then it could deviate in the wrong direction.
Well, I don't know if it's learning. It just takes everything into consideration.
Yeah. I was under the impression he manually adds into the algorithm or whatever he's using.
I was under the impression that, you know, the more poems are on the site, the more they all just kind of get in there and they get then added to the mix of professional and amateur. I cannot be this.
The thing that always hits me that I see where it says is my abstract. It always pulls me down. It's like 2 abstracts. I'm like, yeah, but, you know.
Well,
okay.
Everything
I
is cliche because the more people that use it, the more cliche it is. And so love and soul and any kind of mental concepts, they're all cliche because, I mean, let's face it, we're poets, and we tend to lament about things. So, you know, it's the more people write about it, the more I cannot copy this on my thing. Give me 1 second to try to get this on there, and I will tell you what it is. Oh, my computer. Yeah, it's not wanting to. It will not scroll for me because my internet is crap and it's just not scrolling up. Here we go. And as soon as I said that, of course, it wants a copy, which is good. So here we go. I will tell you what it is. Edit, select all, edit, paste. Okay. Auto ranked. 5.8. So it went down a little bit. And, like, yeah, so my favorite one started at a 4-point-something, and then a few years back it was a 3.4, and now it's just a 1. So the way I interpret what AutoRank does is that whenever you put anything in there, I put anything in there, anybody puts anything in there, it gets judged by the original criteria, and then it gets added to the mean, to the averages it uses in its little algorithm to come up with the numbers. So if you've got, you know, a class project for a bunch of 11-year-olds that are on here learning how to write whatever they're learning how to write, and there are a bunch of them on here doing this stuff, and they're just starting out, it's going to weigh just as equally as that poem by Dickinson, as the poem by Ella Wheeler Wilcox, as the sonnet by Shakespeare. It gets, everything gets weighed and measured. And so the more things are alike, the more the numbers will shift. And that they're shifting in the wrong direction. They're shifting away from the professional poem that's ranking high to the amateur poems ranking higher. And
there's
so people that come on don't realize that. What?
There's one other thing that when Deborah was going over with me, because I was saying I didn't understand, I never paid attention to it, but it's a grammar Nazi, too. Too many spaces between words, too many spaces between stanzas.
Because I feel like if you misspell a word, it thinks you're using a unique word, and it will, when you correct the spelling, because I've done this before, if you put an incorrect spelling, it ranks higher because it thinks it's a unique word, and then you fix the word to the correct spelling, and it goes down because it's looking for words that aren't commonly used. And the more uncommon words you have, so if you use different languages, if you use the wrong spelling, if you use like a word like flibbertigibbets or something kind of really silly, it's looking at the word, not so much the connotation of how you're using it or how it's spelt.
And it also doesn't rank in any way, shape, or form the meaning of the piece, the lines. I wrote as a... as proof that AutoRank is, you know, does not rank the quality of a poem, just whatever it deems the words to be in a math problem. I wrote one. It says nothing, even made it to the front page, which nauseates me. I wrote one. I changed whatever I had to change to make it a 10, and it says nothing. And it's a 10. And then somebody put it on the front page. Why, I have no clue. It's embarrassing. But if you use all these adjectives and all of these adverbs and there's no substance to it, it doesn't care. They're like, I love all of these words. Nobody ever uses all of these words. So, you know, it's if you want to just as a... an exercise of writing to find out, you know, to see if you can get those unique words, to see if you can get this similarity, to see if you can use your, and it's not a grammar Nazi. It does say noun, verb, order. However, it'll rank an abstract, which deconstructs a sentence, a lot higher than it'll rank an actual perfectly grammatical sentence, because, again, it is unique. So, you know, take it with a grain of salt. It's a fun exercise to try to do. but it does not speak to the worth of a poem, to the meaning of a poem, to what a poem makes you feel. Deborah Lee was saying when she first hopped on that there's a poem about her father. I put that one on the front page when I was picker because it made me cry. The poem, it was back when her father passed, and it is heart-wrenching. Like I was bawling like an idiot. And it's a beautiful, beautiful poem. You cannot tell me that poem is unworthy. And it ranked a one. You know, so you gotta take it with a grain of salt. It's not something to strive to. If it's going to change the way you write or change the way your creative flow is, if it's going to hinder your creativity, just leave it on the side. You know, if you want to write your poem the way you want to write your poem, and then as a separate poem or a draft, you want to take that poem and mess it all around and do whatever you want to do to see if you can get that number up, I think that it'll be an interesting thing to see side by side what the original poem was meaning-wise versus what you ended up with on AutoRank and see how similar they end up at all, you know? Because I might actually do that because that'll be an interesting little, you know, something to do with
the word. That's a good way of saying that.
Yeah. So I think it's definitely an interesting exercise, a fun way to play with words, so long as it doesn't, you know, hinder your creativity or stifle what you're trying to say. You know, sometimes simple and easy gets the point across more poignantly than 52 words that say nothing, you know?
Yeah.
So, all with a grain of salt. I mean, it's fun. You know, it really is. And I was laughing up a storm trying to get my first 10. I was like, all right, I can't get a 10 to save my life. I've been on here 4 years, but let's see what I have to do. And I was just laughing the whole time because it really just is a bunch of words.
That's risky.
Yeah, but it was fun. What is it, Sky?
My friend and I did I'm laying down and I'm half asleep, so please forgive me. But my friend and I, we're really silly. She's on a site and she lives in England, and we'll talk in like predictive text. So we said, hey, let's make a poem in predictive text, right? So we did this whole poem together, predictive text, and we put it on because she has some thoughts about that too. And it got a 10. And it doesn't even make any sense. And she's a biochemist. She does, and she has a major in she does like her job is all about, she just loves math and loves equations and loves all those things that I hate actually. So she loves to play with that AutoRank because she's like, it's just a math equation. And so, I mean, she has some, I won't share her thoughts because they're quite negative on it, but she's just like, that's what she says to everybody now. She's just like, well, just do auto predict and make absolutely no sense and you'll get a 10.
That's like humans 1, AI 0.
Yeah.
Beats the machine, yeah.
I think for some, you know, on a positive note, I'm sorry.
Sorry, that was my dog. If you heard that, that's so embarrassing.
I don't think they heard over my yawning. At least I didn't. For some, when people write, and they want to change how they're writing, and they want to say, how can I infuse my poetry with different language? And having the incentive of trying to get that up, and trying to infuse their poetry with different language or striving it for their own selves, and like Deb said, kind of comparing to what she used to do and what she does now and trying different language, I do think that it's a personal preference. However, like Pretty Bird, with that, you want to try different things. You want to see if it actually sounds better if you start infusing a few things or changing your verb versus noun, which I always fail at. It always says I never put my words in the right order. That's where I always, because I do look at it on the side. I don't really change it, so because I don't, I don't always like it. If I don't like my poem, that's all that matters to me. If I don't like it, I'm not going to change it. And if I like it, I'm not going to change it. So, but I do take a look at it just to see where it is that says that I fall short. And it's always the abstract, and it's always the similarity. I always score a 10, and then the similarity, I often will score perfect. But then my other things start dragging me down, which is the verb versus noun and whatever. But if a poet wants to take that and they want to do it for themselves and they find pleasure in it, I think that's great. But I think that the problem is, like when Pretty Bird said, when it starts taking away from their own voice and their own way of writing, because you think about, Michelangelo, nobody would put up his statue. They're like, put this away, lock it up, we don't want it. It's not in, That criteria could change in another 3 years because something else might be popular. You think about all these poets, they were never popular in their time. They never had that. So when you think about being inside of a box, why be inside the box? As long as you're happy with your writing and as long as it's not taking away your inspiration or downing you like, oh, this poem sucks, it's a one. Well, no, that's not true. It's looking at the mechanics. And so I think you can take both with that. And I'm rambling. Someone shut me up.
I know one guy that didn't make Michelangelo.
Take both sides.
You mentioned about being put in the box, guy. Just as Schrodinger's
cat. I don't even know. Yeah, but it's important to look. There's a good and then, but you always have to, I think the underlying thing, the most important thing, I can't agree more with Pretty Bird. As long as it's not taking away from your voice,
your feeling, your emotion, to convey. Yeah.
And your style, because
even if you don't know you have a style, when you're done writing it, it's going to feel some kind of way. It's going to be something. And until it's done being born, you really can't tweak it,
Yes.
Well, every site or every author will tell you the best thing to do is read. Read other people's poetry. Keep reading it. And writing, of course, and you'll develop your own.
I got that down. I've got the reading down. Sometimes it takes away from the writing.
Unless you're cleaning.
Well, I don't read audio poetry. I do a lot of audio fiction books because I am very much, I have to go. But I never do poetry audio. I love all my fiction
books.
See,
now I feel special.
I do listen to yours because... Okay, let me rephrase.
That's what I'm
myself.
Saying. That's now I feel special.
Now you feel special. I don't listen to classical authors usually in audio because
the name is Pretty Bird.
Unless they're Pretty Bird, and unless I do have a playlist on audio on my YouTube that I do. Because a lot of times when people, like audiobooks specifically, if it's all one voice reading every poem and I don't agree with the person reading it, I'm like, no, this is not how they sound. I don't like it. So on YouTube, they have a lot of poets reading their own work. I like that. Emily Dickinson audiobook, and I was like, nope. They read it way too fast. The tone was off. I was like, this is not how I picture it. And so I guess it depends. But I don't often read poetry, listen to poetry. I do sometimes, but not often. But I do stalk Pretty Bird. That is true. I think that's like the only reason why I have SoundCloud on my phone, just to listen to Pretty Bird.
I can relate to that. That's a good thing.
And it is 12:15, guys. We are over, and I am loving the chat. So I'm thinking we should probably say goodnight.
Wonderful show. Wonderful talk.
On the
thank
board,
you.
Wondering where the show is. So, it'll be up in a second, Titus. Not that he can hear me now, but he'll hear me later. So we're good. So you guys are fabulous. Thank you for hanging out with me and engaging with me and not leaving me to chatter on about AutoRank by myself, because, you know, I could, but it's so much better with everybody else. So thank you guys. I really, really appreciate it. And thank you for bringing me your inspiration. I loved how different everybody's poems were, not only the poems they wrote, but the poems that inspired them, the poems that they enjoyed. So I get a big kick out of that. And now there are some, like the child prodigy poet that now I have to go and look into and read and cry over. So I love that. So thank you all. And good night, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'll talk to you.
Good night.